if we're going to talk about invention in the U.S., we need to talk with Nathan Myhrvold. He was Microsoft's first chief technology officer. He holds 17 patents with Microsoft and 117 with his company Intellectual Ventures. But he's not just a billionaire tech nerd. He's also explored the world's volcanoes, studied penguin digestion, found several T-Rexes, built a section of Babbage's Difference engine. He's even the world barbecue grand champion. And Strange Champs caught up with Myhrvold to talk about inventing and his six-volume, 2,400-page, 52-pound cookbook called Modernist Cuisine.
You know, what I really love about this approach to cooking is that it seems to me it brings a sense of wonder back to food. I mean, people who are interested in food and cooking, after a while, if you've amassed a certain library of cookbooks, you do kind of get to the point where you feel like, yeah, you know, I've cooked everything, or not everything, but I've cooked sort of all the basics. This makes it all seem like brand new territory all over
and,
again.
You know, that is such a great comment, because that's exactly what it's about. It's about finding wonder and fun and novelty in food. You know, people love variety in what they eat. 30 years ago, it was hard to find sushi. These days, you can find sushi in probably every shopping mall in the United States and likely the world. Now, sushi seemed like a very strange thing initially. You know, raw fish and vinegared rice, what's up with that? But in fact, a lot of people have come to love it. And it's part of the diversity of things we have. Well, going forward, some of the diversity of our food is going to come from inventing new things, not just importing something. You know, sushi was an imported food. The people in Japan had made it for 1,000 years, so we just got to import it and enjoy it. We also get the opportunity to invent new foods. And of course, through history, people have. Ice cream was an invention, and I must say a very good one. So was pizza, so was bread, so was wine, so was cheese. Almost all of every aspect of cooking has got some really invented food. And I mean invented in the sense that, you know, an apple isn't invented. It grows wild. Farmers have done a lot of work to develop tastier versions of apples. But an apple you eat pretty much au naturel. The same thing is true of lots of other foods, but not ice cream, not pasta, not pizza, not wine. Those things are inventions. And I think going forward, we have an opportunity to invent lots of more things. And exactly what you said, bring a sense of wonder and fun and excitement to dining that you don't get if it's just same old, same old.
Does it translate to ordinary food too? You know, I made scrambled eggs for breakfast this morning. Would the modernist cooking techniques help me scramble my egg any differently?
One of my favorite recipes in the whole book is our scrambled eggs recipe, and I make it for myself 3 times a week. Now, there's 2 tricks in our scrambled eggs recipe, one of which you need some equipment to do, but I'll tell you one that you can use when you next time you make scrambled eggs. It's really simple. If you're making a 3-egg batch of scrambled eggs, make it out of 2 whole eggs and 1 egg yolk. So that means out of the 3 eggs, you're going to throw 1 egg white away. Now, why do that? Well, it turns out that the texture of the egg and the flavor of the egg is strongly influenced by the ratio of yolk to white. And just by throwing 1 egg white away, it's richer, it's creamier, it's softer textured, it's more yellow, it tastes more like egg. So give that a try.
My kids are going to love you. Sounds great. Now, I want to talk some about the whole process of invention, of coming up with new things. You know, we talked about it being connected to wonder. But when you're just sitting around, you know, you're coming up with a new recipe, you're tinkering or whatever, how does that process work for you? What's an example of the kind of question that might come to your mind?
I think if you talked to a bunch of inventors or innovators, you'd find that ideas come from all kinds of places or from nowhere. You know, it's one of the great mysteries of where do creative new ideas come from. And often you can draw a particular, you can say, oh, there's a source of inspiration. You know, happy accidents are one of the great sources of invention. You screw around with stuff, you try some things, something unexpected happens. So some of the ideas that we have in the cookbook happen that way, either to us or to other chefs who discovered it, told us about it, and we put it in the book.
Well, I asked that question because, you know, there have been a spate of articles and books lately about the decline of American innovation. And I'm wondering if, from where you sit, Do you think American innovation is in decline? Are we inventing less than we used to?
Well, an amazing thing about America is that America started being the world's leading inventing company, or country, excuse me, in the 19th century. So you had the cotton gin, you had the telegraph, the telephone, you had all the wonderful things Edison did. But in the 19th century, America was an agricultural nation. We were the third world back then. What I mean is, it was a largely agricultural, rural country. We had a few big cities. We had a little bit of industry going on, but not that much in the 19th century. We had huge social problems in this country. We had massive corruption in, you know, New York City, Tammany Hall. If you saw Gangs in New York, it's about that. Mm-hmm. We had a brutal civil war. But somehow, the American spirit of innovation, which partially had been channeled into exploring the frontier, part of that spirit of innovation got channeled into coming up with new ideas. And America has been a fantastic inventor since then. So I don't think it's declining. I think, in fact, it's about to enter a new golden era. And you can see that in what's going on in Silicon Valley. You can see that in the creativity that is happening in startups and just new ideas all over the place.
I have to call you out on that. There was a fairly significant Freudian slip you made there earlier when you referred to the great American company, not country. That's exactly what a lot of people would say is wrong with or is in the way of American innovation, is that we have become the great American company.
Well, you know, I will agree with you in part that really wild innovation only rarely comes from companies, or big companies anyway. Really wild ideas come from an individual or a small group of individuals. And so if you look at really great inventions, look at the airplane that Orville and Wilbur Wright developed. They were not part of the R&D department of a railroad company where they said, I know, we'll have a better way to screw putting the railroad lines down. Let's fly.
Well, I asked you this because, you know, in addition to working on gorgeous modernist cuisine, you also have a company, Intellectual Ventures. This is a company that buys patents from small inventors and startups. And at this point, your company is
amassed. And big companies, too.
But at this point, you've amassed one of the largest patent portfolios in the world. And you and your company have been vilified for this. You've been called a patent troll frequently. The suggestion being that what you're doing is actually hindering the development of small inventions.
So here's the thing. If you come up with a new idea that's a really powerful new idea, somebody's going to find it threatening. And I think that's pretty much true no matter what area you're in. If you upset the apple cart, there's some entrenched player who says, you know, this could be bad for me. Or they don't understand it fully. And so if you look throughout history, lots of big, powerful ideas were vilified early on. In this case, the people who are critics, I think, don't really understand what we do, which is we are trying to create a market for invention, and we're trying to allow inventors to get paid for their inventions. And the reality is there are some inventors that are both well-positioned personally and they have the interest and the resources that they can go commercialize their inventions. And if that's true, God bless them. They should go do it. But there's another set of folks that say, look, I'm a research scientist. I came up with this great idea. I'm not the guy to take it forward. Or the individual inventor, or even the large company. You know, we've bought patents from most of the Fortune 500. By the way, we also invent our own patents. We're one of the largest inventing organizations in the United States.
So what do you do with the patents you buy?
So we try to make them work. And there's a bunch of ways that you do that. One way is you create a new company. And so we've done that a few times. We've got a company that is developing an exciting new kind of nuclear power reactor. Because the world needs a carbon-free, clean energy source that's safe. And we think that this new reactor might be that. Now, it's a very daunting project. We've hired a whole bunch of the smartest nuclear engineers we can find. We're working with universities and national labs. And we're trying to make that thing work. You know, we've got a couple other things like that where we're creating a company. We also sell our patents to people sometimes because a company will say, look, I really need this patent. I need to own it for a bunch of reasons. So those are the ways we try to make money doing it. And frankly, we're better at doing that than the typical university or the typical independent individual inventor. Mm-hmm. Or even, strangely enough, we're better at this than a Fortune 500 company.
In the meantime, this subject raises hackles on both sides all over. It's incredibly complicated and beyond the scope of this interview. But I'm just curious, if you were going to scrap the entire patent system we have now, which certainly has received plenty of criticism, you know, if the president of the U.S. came to you and said, we want to jumpstart American innovation. We've always been a country of makers, and we're concerned that our current patent system is just not really working all that well. We want to get back to a situation in which everyone, small inventors, basement startups, and bigger companies, can flourish. Would that be possible?
Well, here's the problem. You know, my company has, one way or another, we've given about $300 million to individual inventors in the United States. That's royalties on their inventions, primarily. It's also some money we've given them up front to help develop inventions. Now, who else is going out there giving $300 million to individual inventors in the U.S.? And the only reason I'm able to do that, it's not because I'm a philanthropist. I'm able to do that because I have investors, and my investors want a return. And if you don't let me earn a return from my investors, they're going to stop investing this way. Meanwhile, if you do let me make a return, then I can create a new industry I call invention capital, very much like venture capital, where investors will say, hey, they'll fund other people, not just me, to do this. And we'll get billions of dollars a year channeled into helping inventors invent new things. Now, venture capital did that for entrepreneurs. And imagine America if venture capital hadn't created Microsoft, Apple, Cisco, Facebook, Google. Those companies have changed the world, and they've changed this country for the better because they've given enormous amounts of employment and wealth and economic opportunity, not only to their employees, but to everyone they do business with. Now, that's all because a bunch of crazy guys 30, 40 years ago in Silicon Valley had the idea, let's fund entrepreneurs. I have the crazy idea, let's fund inventors. And if we can fund a bunch of inventors to go do great new inventions, I think we can make our economy better, we can get unemployment down, and we can have a really sustainable source of value going into the remainder of the 21st century. Because unfortunately, the old things we used to be good at, the rest of the world's catching up at. We can't be the only great manufacturer, the only great agricultural power, because there's so many other countries that are developing. But invention is something that we have been so uniquely good at for, you know, more than 100 years now. I think we can take it forward into the next 100 years.
Nathan Myhrvold talking with Ann Strainchamps. Myhrvold was Microsoft's first chief technology officer. He holds 17 patents with Microsoft and 117 with his company Intellectual Ventures. His cookbook, The Modernist Cuisine, won the 2012 James Beard Award.